Yeah, right.
All right, I am Jess Fama. This is In Your Ear, and that was just a little sample of my band of the episode, Bloody Diamonds, and that was Nightmare, their newest single. Gotta check them out. But in studio with me right now, I am pleased to have owner of War Machine Marketing, entrepreneur, music lover, journalist, Star Wars fanatic, and overall awesome dude.
Thank you.
Roll Coley. Hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good. I'm so happy that you are on here today and we get to chat and have awesome conversation.
I am so honored that you asked me to be here. Seriously.
Thank
this
you
is
so
super
much.
Awesome.
Thank you. And on top of all these awesome things that we're going to talk about, we are totally talking about War Machine Marketing because you invented this. This is your baby. This is something that you created in 2007,
yes.
I believe. And it's just been growing ever since. And it's amazing when you have a love and a passion for something, but then you get to bring all these other aspects into helping that market out. And with that, it's all these marketing gears that you have for musicians and others alike, obviously.
Yeah, it's evolved over the years, that's for sure.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about why you started War Machine Marketing.
Sure. So back in the day when I was working at Roadrunner Records and Century Media Records and a couple other places, I was doing street marketing. And it was kind of in the early 2000s when street marketing was so, I guess happening is really the best word for it, but it was so glutted. There was so much going on and there was so much competition, but I felt like people really weren't... I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of integrity with it.
Right.
It was a lot of companies just utilizing, street teamers and kids, but
for free a lot of the time.
For free most of the time,
yeah.
Actually. But they were kind of using them as slave labor, I always felt. And when I had my street team, my thing was all about doing it right. You know, I was working at Roadrunner. We didn't have huge budgets. We didn't have Sony budgets and Warner Brothers budgets. So
right.
We had to really make sure that everything we had went to the right people. You
right.
know, it's like we didn't want, you know, Grandpa Joe to be getting CD samplers. What the hell is he going to do with it?
Throw them away, probably.
Exactly.
Like, what is this music?
Right. Well, you know, and that's what I was trying to teach my kids was, you know, how to do it properly. Like who to aim for, when to street team and when not to street team. Just mm-hmm. because you're at a concert that's got, you know, just because you're at a Slayer show, and there's 5,000 people there, doesn't mean that that's necessarily the best place to promote. Because if there's 25 other street teamers there and you're there too, you know, my philosophy is if everyone's special, then no one's special.
Right.
So what's to separate, you know, my Roadrunner stuff from Sony and Warner Brothers and Island Records and all these other places? Ours is just going to get lost in the mix. So it was about trying to teach kids how to do it right, like teaching them that they weren't just handing stuff out, that they were actually marketing, that they were actually building a skill.
Right.
That's what I was trying to teach them.
And on top of that, too, you don't want to lose the integrity of what it is that you're handing out to people. So
exactly.
It's like when you get all this spam in your email and you're like, how do I look through all this? You can't. So people just get rid of all of it because, like you said, when everything's special, nothing is.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's exactly the best way to put it. And it got to the point where, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners and you can probably relate, you know, people were looking for alternate exits out of concerts because it was like, crap, I don't want to get 9,000 pieces of swag. And
yeah.
It started to get so insane, you know, that people would just have like these handfuls of swag and the first place they would go is the garbage.
Yeah, or on the ground.
Or on the ground,
yeah.
Exactly. And so I was trying to do it smarter. I was trying to do it better and be a lot more meticulous with it. But I found that more and more just these labels that I was working at, just they almost just wanted the Hollywood aspect of it. They almost just wanted the perception is reality. Like, look at what we're doing. We have
right.
80,000 kids. And it's like, none of that matters. You know, if people aren't getting your stuff, then your bands aren't going to sell.
Right.
They're not going to do anything. And that's why you ended up seeing, like, especially during, I guess it was like Ozfest 03 and 04, when you had like the Streetwise stage and all this sort of stuff, you know, bands like Neurotica and Finger Tight. And I mean, where are any of these bands now?
Yeah.
They're all gone because they used all their money for street promotions, but these kids, nobody was teaching these kids actually how to do it. And right. I was, that was really what my point was. So when I started War Machine Marketing, the whole point was, we want to do it right. We want to do it the best way possible. I want my kids to be smart. I want them to understand, like, you know, if you're going to promote a show, you know, and you're going to go there early and hang up posters, make sure you hook up security first.
Yeah.
Hook them up with CDs. Hook them up with the stickers. Hook them up before all your swag is gone, because chances are, if you treat them well, they're going to treat you well.
Yep.
You know?
People think I'm crazy, but you know what? I don't care about knowing the bartenders to get a free drink.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the bouncer. I want to know the door guy.
Exactly.
Those are the people that you need to know.
Because they'll see you over and over and over again. And that's why my kids ended up getting a lot more perks out of it than other street teamers. They would get kicked out and my kids would be allowed to stick around.
Right.
You know? And so
Very smart.
That's what it was all about. It was all about being smart and understanding what you're doing. I mean, there's nothing worse than when some kid's like, oh, how come that band's not gonna tour, and how come they're not coming to my town? And it's like, because the CD samplers I sent you are still sitting in your friggin' closet.
Right.
What do you think is going to happen if nobody knows about these bands, you know?
Especially, you know, in 2007, the internet, yes, was here. It was around. I mean, we had Napster already. You know,
right.
Things were changing so much then that the influx of, like, someone just getting, like, one free song on a CD or, a sticker or a piece of paper that said when a band was going to, it didn't matter anymore.
Right.
You needed something different, something.
That's exactly bigger. It. When street marketing first started, well, not when it first started, but when it really started to get its, I don't know, I guess kind of dig its heels in, was with System of a Down. That was really the first band that people started realizing, because like Streetwise, which them and their sister company, Velvet Hammer Management, you know, they started doing the whole street marketing thing, but the internet was brand new. It was 1998, you know, the internet was brand new. And so they were able to start with Slipknot and System and Static X, and they were able to blow it up really, really well because that was all that people had, you know. But as email started to get more popular, as the internet started to become more easily accessible, everybody started to be about it, and then it got extremely diluted.
Yeah.
So that's why I started War Machine, was to try and do a smarter street team. Unfortunately, around 07, 08 was when the recession happened, and nobody wanted a street team, you know?
But you improved upon your own model.
I did. I kind of switched the flip, as they say.
Yes.
I decided that, you know, it was funny because I'd go to, you know, companies and talk up the street team, and they'd be like, look, we need business cards, but I don't need a team to hand out my business cards.
Right.
And I was like, well, that's kind of a good point. So I switched it and kind of put the street marketing stuff on the side and said, let me make all the swag then. Let me, you know, I was on that side as well of, you know, I was the guy ordering the stickers or lanyards or guitar picks or posters or whatever, you know, that was printed that we could hand out. I decided, hey, you know, everybody needs that, and it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're Slipknot or you're some local death metal band or you're Toyota or whoever. I mean, everybody needs stuff that they're going to use. I mean, hell, dude, you could even go to a wedding, you know, and they're going to have, you know, personalized pint glasses for everybody to take home. It's like, you know, everybody needs that kind of stuff. So.
Absolutely.
I decided to kind of take a step back from the street marketing thing and kind of focus more on this side of it. And that's where War Machine has kind of really gotten its legs and wings and has kind of taken off in a really interesting, crazy kind of way.
And I have to just say really quick, I love your, I guess it's like your motto.
My tagline?
Yes, if business is war, we have your best ammunition. I like that.
Thank you.
Well, it's true though, if business is war, you need things to fight with, quote unquote.
That's exactly it. I look at myself as a marketing weapons dealer because basically if Sony and Warner Brothers are competing, I can make stuff for Sony and I can make stuff for Warner Brothers. And if they want to use that to fight against each other, that's on them. On me.
Yep.
You know, so.
But it's helping you because you're right in that middle and you're like, I can help you both.
That's exactly. That's what I like about it is that I get to work, instead of being in the music industry, in the video game industry, in any of that, I don't work in them. I work with them.
Right.
So what it allows me to do is to make stuff and not be involved in the company politic, you know? So it's like, okay, if hypothetically speaking, if it's like Warner Brothers, you know, and they asked me to make whatever My Chemical Romance stuff, you know, if there's a problem within the band or the band breaks up or something like that, has absolutely nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with what I do. You know, my job is to make sure that they get the items that they've requested. And that's what it is. You know?
You name a band like My Chemical Romance, but it's true. You're working with some really big names here, like Foo Fighters, Dixie Chicks, Bon Jovi. Like, that's really cool to be able to be a part of their marketing team and helping them.
And it's actually kind of funny because originally when War Machine started, the whole street marketing thing, I wanted to keep it with what I call dark pop culture. So basically anything that's at Hot Topic, I felt was basically a good target. But I also felt like that was also, in hindsight, kind of painting me in a corner.
Right.
So I've done stuff for, you know, elementary schools, and I've done stuff for Ricky Martin. I've done, you know, bands and artists that I never normally would have gone for.
Right.
But again, it's like, why limit myself, you know?
Absolutely.
If Mattel needs something done for Barbie, like, why should I say no?
You're like, I'll make metal Barbie, what?
Well, not even that. It's like, you know, I mean, we've had people come up to me and just be like, hey, you know, we have this theme, and the theme is pink and glitter. Okay, great. I make pink and glitter stuff. Let's make pink and glitter stuff. You know, it's like everybody needs something. So my job is to help everybody find that something for the best price.
Awesome.
You know,
and well, like you said, though, everybody needs it.
Right.
Everybody across the board. I do. I know a ton of my friends who do, and I've sent a few your way.
Thank you.
Of course. Come on. That's what friends do. On top of anything else, it doesn't matter that you're my friend. You actually put out really good product.
Thank you.
That's what matters.
And not for nothing. It's funny because I get people who call me, you know, like SEO companies, and, you know, people are like, hey, we can help your business model, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, you know, word of mouth is still the best and most effective way that I get my business.
It always will be. That's from the start of time, you know.
Right.
Word of mouth will always be number one. I mean, we have businesses like Yelp and things like that help with the word of mouth type deal. But if I know someone personally who went somewhere and got something done and they vouch for that, that speaks volumes.
That's exactly it.
And I think that's for everybody. And I've seen your work, and I know I personally vouch for your stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, and also it's funny because, you know, when it comes to promotional items and band merchandise and all these kinds of things, you know, you can, you know, if a company is like, hey, we need pens. Yeah, you could go to pens.com or, you know, promoguy.com or something like that, and it's like these very nameless, faceless organizations. The whole point of War Machine is, you know, to have an identity. You know, it's like, we don't want to just be, you know, another promo company just out there. It's like, the whole point is, you come to War Machine Marketing because even the place that you are going to get what, however basic it is, business cards or, you know, keychains or whatever, like, I want people to know that they got it from War Machine. You know,
so you're going to make sure that every product that you put out there is worth mentioning for someone.
Exactly.
Else.
Like, in other words, you know, like, if we do something, you know, again, if we do something wrong or something messes up, you know, it's not like we can just, like, dissolve the company, turn into a different company. Oh, no, now I'm Machine War Marketing. You know, like, instead of, you know, we can't do that. We have to stand by our name. We have to stand by our products. And if we do mess up, if we do screw up, you know, I'm the guy who's there I'm the guy fighting the fire. You know, I'm the guy putting it out. And I'm going to make sure that however things got messed up, that they're going to be the one that they're going to get corrected.
So are you saying that you have 100% satisfaction guarantee on all of your products?
I do. Unless people are stupid. I'll give you a good example. I made there was a dispensary out here in California that I made lighters for. You know, they gave out lighters to all of their
Free Lighter Tuesday
patients, to all of their patients, quote unquote.
In California, they are.
Yes, exactly. So, but I mean, but they were like, you know, they ordered the cheapest lighters they could get, which were about 28 cents each, you know, but they were ordering literally 10,000 at a time, which was great for me. But they were like, hey, you know, people, like, the lighters have been exploding. And I'm like, okay, that's definitely a problem. What's going on? How many people have come back and said this? And they're like six. And I'm like, look, I make 50,000 lighters for you guys a year, and six exploded. I'm not going to be responsible for what stoners do.
Right.
You know, because if you're keeping your lighter in a car in the middle of summer in Riverside, yeah, that's going to explode.
Yeah.
If you're going to, you know, the whole point of a lighter is to light it straight up and light a cigarette. But if you're going to be lighting a bong, then you're lighting it upside down. The flame is literally going back inside the damn lighter.
Into the lighter fluid.
So that's what's going to happen. It will explode. So, yeah. So I can't really... You know, like, so
that's, yeah, but you know what? That doesn't go under that. That's not something that you messed up. That's not on you.
Right. But, so, you know, but people yeah. like to say that, you know, like, of oh, course. Well, I didn't think it was going to be like that. And it's like, well, if you're not using it for the purpose in which it's supposed to be right. used, that's kind of what's going to happen, you know? So, you know, we always want our clients to be super happy. I mean, you know, and if they're not, then yeah, I will do whatever I possibly can to fix it. I mean, it is my name on the line. It's every part of it is, you know,
right.
like I said, it's tattooed on my arm. It's everywhere. So it's like, I can't just be like, oh, what's that over there? And then duck out the door,
you're
you know, like
boosh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a cloud of smoke
exactly.
around
just like
gone.
A ninja, you know, hey, what's that over there? Yeah, you know,
where'd Ro go?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
Yeah.
You like come back.
Ro?
With
yeah, exactly. And a fake mustache. Yeah. Ro who? I don't know this Ro person.
Oh my God. I love it. All right. I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to, here's some of my interview from my band of the episode, Bloody Diamonds. And then I'm going to play one of their singles. I love this song, Skin and Bones. I just, Sarah, she's a great vocalist and her keys on this are amazing. But when we come back, I'd really like to delve into your earlier years.
Sure.
About some of the fun things that you used to do. You know, I know you still dabble in them now, but you know.
Dabble. The that makes it sound like it's drugs.
It wasn't. Well, maybe it was.
Oh, yeah. Right?
We'll get to that later.
Drugs is relative.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with more with Ro Coley. And right now, this is my interview with Bloody Diamonds. So They've Got Secrets, that's your debut album, came out in 2012. Now, how have things changed for you since you formed and since you recorded that first album? Because I know you've had a lot of changes in your band.
Here we go.
Question one.
Pretty much everything has changed yeah. since that album. Like, that was a long time ago. I mean, it wasn't really, a couple years, but...
I don't know, our lineup changed a million times.
10 times, yeah. 20 times.
And, Jake played bass
played bass
at first. Now he plays guitar. We moved halfway across the country.
Oh.
Because
you were from Halifax?
Yeah,
right?
We moved to Toronto.
We toured over two countries with it.
Yeah, did a lot of touring. Smashed a van, bought a new van.
Oh no, what happened? How'd you smash the van? I gotta know that real quick.
Well, actually, to be honest, we just kind of ran it into the ground. It was a minivan. And we had way too much gear in it, and like eventually it was dragging on the ground, and the muffler and the exhaust both fell off on our way to a show. We ended up duct taping it every like 20 minutes or so, and then it would fall off again, and then we'd duct tape it again. We got to the show and made it back home, but then we gave it to the junkyard.
Should have got cool.
Yeah.
That was bad. No,
I don't know. They say if you can't duck it, fuck it. So, you know what I mean?
Well, they don't know about gorilla tape.
We had two more shows that weekend, and like, seriously, like they were like 2-hour drives from each other, but it was taking like 5 hours because it was seriously every 10 minutes we'd stop and spend 10 minutes like duct taping the muffler.
Oh, no.
Because they get hot, right? And the
yeah.
duct tape melts. And
anyways, no yeah. So, I don't know. A million things has changed, and the music has changed, and we. Got better and yeah.
Always gets more things that you want to put into the music and stuff like that. So
No, spending a lot of time on the road, like we've spent a significant amount of time on the road since that album came out, and I think that really changed us for better or for worse. I'm not sure, but like it went like we were like young kids when we did that album, and like I would say the road has hardened us a bit.
Well, you said in one of your interviews before that working at your regular 9-to-5 job seems like such a waste of time because being on the road and playing your instruments is really the practice and the work that you want to be doing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Luckily, we got new jobs recently, though, in Toronto. We have new day jobs that are, like, super, they're in the entertainment industry. They're fun.
Oh,
they're
good.
Cool. Shout out to our
so
boss.
It doesn't feel like as waste of time.
No, yeah. Like I said, like, we came a long way since that. Like, our day jobs don't even suck anymore.
Yeah.
So
that's always a plus.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
Going to your band members changing, because you've had multiple band members change, and Sarah and Jake, you've been the original two since the start. You've toughed it out, and you said those changes have helped to mature you as a band. In what ways do you think that you've grown and changed?
proved a lot to ourselves of resilience, you could say. Like, we've been through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
You've matured. You've matured as musicians and as...
As people,
you know,
man.
As adults and people, and, like, figured out your goals and what you want to do, and okay. You've...
Yeah,
you guys have really
older.
Locked into a commitment.
Got older. No, but I grew up on the road now, man. Yeah. And, like I was, like, a kid when we started this thing, and, like, not a kid anymore, I guess you could say. And, like, we grew up on the road now, and it's... I guess it's kind of cool to be able to say that, but at the same time, it's kind of frightening a little bit. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? This is it.
You're like, oh no, like, I'm this, an adult now. Yeah.
This, like, this is it. Like, this is my life now, and I'm happy with it. I'm really proud of a lot of the things we've done over the last couple of years, and I'm really stoked to be playing with these guys now.
The new members of the band.
Yeah.
Should be said that, like, Jake and Sarah, they've been the original members from the beginning, but they have, I'd say a lot that has changed would be, like, they've learned a lot along the way other than just... writing and jamming their songs out, like, they do everything for the band. Like, they book all the shows, they do all the planning, all the marketing, all the social media. Anything you've seen happen with Bloody Diamonds is a result of them just jumping
baby.
Into the fire head first.
What's one song that you are most proud of?
That's tough. It's off the new record. We have this new record, right? It's not out yet.
I know it's not out yet.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's coming.
I think ones that are already out yet, Monsters, I think is definitely the best song that we've, like, put out. It always has the best reception, and that's always the one people ask us to play, or they know the words to, or that's always the one people mention is Monsters. But the new record has a song, I like Addicted, I think. It's the last song we played tonight.
Okay. That was a great song.
Yeah, I think that's a really good song, and another one called Rose Tattoo on the new record. I think those are two best songs we've...
For me, it's almost more, it comes down to parts. Or not even parts, but, like, on the new record, there's, like, a few different parts that I'm, like, seriously, like, really stoked on. And I really can't wait to share them with people. I mean, like, people can come see us live, we'll play them. But
right.
I'm really stoked to get the recordings out, like, awesome. When they're finally done and ready to be released.
Yeah, Jake and I pretty much write the songs, but Andrew
has
been
a
recording
weird role,
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, he's a multi... person in the band.
He kind of produced the records even before he was...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I produced and recorded them, and the old one, Monsters EP, and the new one, before I was actually performing with them live.
Okay. So that's how you knew that he was talented enough to be with you.
Yeah, I mean, he's been recording us, like, since our forever. We've never recorded and released anything with anyone else. And the whole time, he kind of manipulated our... Not manipulated, but, you know, he fixed us up and was like, no, you shouldn't
do
that.
Led you in the right direction.
You should do this instead. And, like, you know, he totally... And the first two or three times, I guess, we recorded with him, I didn't really realize that he was, like, technically kind of producing everything.
Gotcha.
And then we were like, oh, maybe we should get a producer. And, like, wait, I think he's kind of actually been doing that the whole time.
Well, the new record is definitely a more conscious... producing effort.
Gotcha.
We approached the songs and, you know, dissected them and, like, thought about them and talked about them and changed stuff. We didn't really do that with the first one. This is like
the first record was like
we used to just
we were young man.
Yeah,
record it and that was it.
So you learned a lot about your recording process though and changed some things along the way. That's really good. Again, it's growing, maturing, learning what you want and what you don't want.
Yeah, I mean, you really find great. A group of artistic people that do something cool together. If they stick together, you know, it all. It's like when you see movie directors working with the same actors, it just keeps getting better and better and better, kind of thing, so.
And then how'd you find this bass player, Jordan, over here?
This guy.
He was playing with Andy in a different band, and, like, they knew each other. Like, Jordan's, like, Toronto native.
Yeah, I met them when they all moved to Toronto. And
okay. We played a show with them, and he was a good bass player, and he gave me a hug at the end of the show, and I was like, oh, he's a really nice guy.
I planted the seed. My other
Andrew
band,
like,
that we were friends, so we played a show with Bloody Diamonds, and they were performing their two-piece set, and, my band, Costume Party, really liked it. And I was like, Jordan, like, they're probably, like, kind of get me to, I might play some drums with them, and they might need a bass player. So kind of planted the seed.
Gotcha. You were whispering in her ear at night.
Yeah.
This is who you need to hire as a bass player. Yeah.
And I definitely valued their, like, dedication and, again, their resilience and being just completely committed into, like, what they're doing.
In recent interviews from before, you said that drinking comes with the territory, and I think a lot of people have the image that it's a nonstop party. Do you guys find that to be true?
I wish
it's not a party. I mean, we do party as much as we can, have but fun. Then,
have
you
fun
know.
When it's time to have fun, but at the same time, like, if we came to this bar and slammed down, like, as many drinks as we could before the set, like, that would be...
Not everybody.
No, that'd be silly.
Half of the band.
No, yeah. No, but it's like, no, seriously though, like, I like to have a good time when it's appropriate to have a good time, but at the same time, like, I make sure, like, it's business first.
Right.
And then,
What he's saying is we don't drink very much before the show. We put on a good show, and then things happen afterwards.
Well, I think that's great, because that's actual, you're showing your work dedication, because there's a lot of bands that forget that.
Yeah.
And they go on stage, and then they don't. Perform the way that they should be performing.
So. Yeah. And when you start touring really young and you learn that as you're touring and you make those mistakes and get way too drunk and then have to get up and drive for like 12 hours and right. go play a show and you're hungover and puking and like you learn that really quick that like you shouldn't do that.
All right. What do you do on the road in your downtime? Do you stop and see famous landmarks? Do you stop to smell the roses, as they say, or do you just sleep?
We've done a lot of all those things this trip.
Yeah, we definitely, if we have time, whatever time we have in the city that we're going to see a landmark or, you know, something cool or just walk around downtown, see the different beaches, I guess. We saw a beach this trip. We definitely do that.
Couple
but sometimes,
beaches.
Yeah, sometimes yeah. there's just no time and you drive straight to yeah. the venue, walk in and load and play your set. But we definitely put in a solid effort to, you know, walk around downtown and, you know, see yeah. the city. And
I think that's great because I think a lot of people forget that that's a great part of being on the road is that you get to see so many awesome things.
Oh,
you know?
That's like, I mean, like...
It's one of the best
If you have the opportunity to see so many places, I can't imagine not taking advantage of it. Like,
right.
we were in Washington, we saw the White House and walked around and took it in, and then we were in Asbury Park, New Jersey, we saw the boardwalk and the beach, which
awesome.
Is cool. We grew up in Nova Scotia, so we knew the Atlantic Ocean Bay, and then we're in Rhode Island, we saw the beach here, and Philadelphia, I don't really see
not too much.
We saw some syringes yeah, on the ground. No, it was an amazing venue in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
the venue
awesome
was
people,
the show
really
was great,
cool.
Yeah.
We were in a crazy area. it is, yeah, we definitely take as much in as we can, I'd say.
Especially, I think the best part is when you go to a city that you've never been to before, and there's actually a couple of people there that aren't there to see the other bands, they're actually there to see you, because they found you on the internet, or they saw your poster, and they looked you up, and they, like, love your music, and so I was like, oh, I've been listening to you guys for weeks now, like, so excited, and it's like, holy crap, like, wow.
Hey, that's how I found you.
Yeah, so... Yeah. That's always makes any show worth it. Even if you're only playing to those two people, if they yeah. came there to see you, it's...
Right.
It's also
yeah,
cool because,
awesome.
Like, usually if that happens and you meet somebody in a different city, you would have no reason to know anybody in otherwise. If they like your music, it usually means that you can relate to each other on a lot of other levels as well.
Right.
So it's, like, pretty trippy to go somewhere else in the world and meet someone that, like, you can... You know, you can hang out with them. It's a normal hangout. You can talk about other topics. You're going to be on the same page, for sure.
Absolutely.
If you relate to each other musically.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
And, like, one thing that's super crazy that I think so many bands just don't realize, and, you know, touring for us is hard. It's super hard because, you know, we have to, financially, it's really hard. Mostly financially. I could, you know, everything else, driving, I could drive all day and, like, play shows. It's all great. But, like, financially, it's really hard for us to
yeah.
get in the van and tour for weeks and weeks and, you know, bring four people on the band who have lives back home and stuff. And
right.
But, like, and everyone's like, oh, man, you tour so much. That's so crazy. And, like, that's so good. And, like, yeah, like, it actually is because everyone that we've ever met at a show across North America that we've played, we are friends with. They're
right.
like, they're not just our fans anymore. They're, like, now our friends. And we have them on Facebook. And, you know, like, they come to the next show that we go to and they bring their other friends. But, like, literally, it's so... You can tell someone, but until you actually do it, they don't realize that, like, getting in your van and touring and going to play in front of these people
right.
is so not the internet.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can have your YouTube hit or whatever and explode on the internet or whatever, but, like, if you take the time to tour and build that
yeah.
base of people that have seen you live, if you're a good live band.
Well,
like,
I can attest that you are a good live band. You're a great live band.
It changes your whole way of being a band, like, to have people that are actually your friend that, you know, they've seen you live, they love your music, but you also hung out with them that night, and,
right.
you know, so like touring, I will tell any band, like, go tour. I know it's going to suck for a while. You're going to lose a lot of money. It's like, you know, it's might suck, but in the end, it's so worth it, and it gets better, and like...
And to walk away from any new venue, even with one new fan, hey, it's one new fan that you have.
Yeah. No, seriously, I think, like, it's really cool to think from where we started, like, you know, with nothing in the, like, east coast of Canada, like, in the middle of nowhere, and, like, now it's, like, we can go anywhere in this continent, and, like, we have, like, friends there that'll, like, hook us up, and it's, like, that's really cool.
My next question actually is, what are some of your major inspirations for some of these songs?
Oh, man, that's a crazy question.
Well, the band started basically with, you know, Jack White?
Yes.
He has a band called The Dead Weather. And, yeah, we heard that band, and it was, like, kind of a mind-blowing experience to hear that band. We're like, wow, like, I think this is the kind of style that we need to write music in. And so, like, our band started with The Dead Weather, and it grew from there. But I listened to a lot of singer-songwriters growing up, so I'm kind of... I only started listening to, like, heavy music when I met Jake. So that's kind of my experience, and, yeah, Jake was into... I don't know. But, yeah, so inspiration's everywhere.
Now, you decided to put your album on vinyl as well as digital, and I noticed that this is actually becoming, like, a bigger trend, like, nowadays. So what was it that made you guys decide to do that?
Records are cool.
Yeah, I think we were just, from the the first album, the debut album, we knew that we were going to put it out on vinyl, and it was almost even a silly thing to do. I don't know, because it's a very big process to press a record. But we did it because we love vinyl, and it was, you know, something to cross off our bucket list. At the time, we were just kids, and, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. It's like, yeah, it'd be so awesome to have your album on vinyl, so we did it. And now it's just a thing with us. Like, everyone loves the vinyl that we have, and we sell more vinyl than CDs usually.
I think it's more tangible, too. Like, you know, you have to hold it, and it's, like, there, and just watching it, you know, when you're playing it, it's a very different feeling than just getting a... something on your computer, on your iPod.
Yeah, and the people that are into vinyl are super into vinyl. Right. So, like, if you're a band that put in the time and the effort and the money to press your vinyl, they are, like, honestly going to be even a bit more crazy about you than you know, if you just have a CD or whatever.
What's next for Bloody Diamonds? What's your next big thing that you're looking forward to?
September, probably, yeah. For now, we're going on a big tour in September.
And you'll be hitting California.
Yeah, we're heading down to LA.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. I will definitely be there.
Nice.
Awesome. Cool. That should be cool.
100%.
And, yeah, then after that, just getting this record out. Like, we've been working on it for what feels like forever now.
Not enough. It's not like we've been working at it every day.
Yeah, we recorded it pretty quickly.
We do chunks of work at a time, and then we sit back, which is actually good.
Which is actually good, because you
come back.
Yeah.
You know, especially after playing the song so many times live, after recording them, you come back to the recordings, and you have a new refreshed energy and perspective on the other work I'm going to do to the mixing it. So it's,
when do you guys hope to release it?
Next year.
Yeah, 2016. 2016. For sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I really look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, you guys.
Well, thank you.
Take all of my money. I don't really even need to eat. I live off of skin and bones, skin and bones, skin and bones. Never had your love.
today we are back. Again, I'm Jess Fama, and I have Ro Coley in the studio with me. This is In Your Ear, and that was a little bit of Bloody Diamonds. Real quick, they're on their North American tour right now. And so if you're in the Sacramento area, they're playing at the Press Club on 9/14. On September 16th, they're playing at the Silver Lake Lounge here in LA. And on the 17th, they're playing in Long Beach at the Black Light District Lounge. So make sure you guys go see them. I will definitely be there at the Silver Lake show.
Nice.
Ro, if you'd like to come, you're more than welcome. I'm inviting you personally right now.
I like it.
Okay, so we know where you are now. Owner, entrepreneur, all this amazing things with War Machine Marketing. And you're blowing up. You're doing amazing things with all of this. And it's awesome to have, like I said, someone who cares about the work that they're putting out there, whether it be for musicians, artists, you know, whatever it is that needs your help, like you are able to do it. But with all good things, they start from somewhere. They had a seed. And I got the pleasure one night of being able to get my hands on Shock to the System. Look familiar?
It sure does.
Of course, because you gave it to me, so yes.
I forgot to give you the other one yesterday, too.
Oh, one day. But this was your zine.
Yes.
This was your zine, Shock to the System. And you, all right, first of all, it's amazing to me because when you were doing all of these articles for these are the bands that I was growing up being like, I want to interview these bands one day. I want to get there. And you were doing it. As I was there wishing and praying that one day I get to be doing that, you were already in the system doing it. How did you start Shock to the System? And what made you stop? Because it was so fun to read.
Okay, so here's the story. And I'll try and get through this as quick as I can, too, because it is a goofy story. Okay, so when I was in high school, I was going to shows, going to see Pantera, going to see White Zombie, going to see Ozzy, all these kinds of shows. I paid for CDs. I paid for concert tickets. That's how it went.
Yep.
When I went to college, I had a college roommate, and I called him before we moved in together just to find out who he was and whatever.
Because you had to fill out those little questionnaires then, but screw it, they never
worked. Not even. It was just like, here's his phone number. Like, that's basically all they gave me.
Really?
So I was like, hi, my name is Ro, and I'm supposed to be your roommate. And so he was telling me that he did this thing called a quote-unquote fanzine, which I had never heard of in my life. But he was telling me how he got free tickets to Lollapalooza and all these places and free CDs, and I was like, oh, right on, this sounds kind of like a cool guy, like right up my alley, blah 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 blah. First day of school, I met him, and it ended up he was all into glam metal, which I absolutely absolutely despise. He looked like Bozo the Clown too. Walked in with a Dangerous Toys t-shirt, and I was like, oh crap. So anyway, this roommate proceeded to be probably one of the biggest douchebags I've ever met in my entire life.
Aww.
And his zine was called, and I feel shitty just even promoting it, but like, not that it even exists anymore. It was called Rock Solid. But it was a terrible zine. I remember reading it, and every picture was him and Bret Michaels, or him and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was just, all the writing was crap. It was filled with grammatical errors and typos, and it was just terrible. And I remember being like, oh my God, like, this guy's getting free CDs, he's getting free tickets, he's getting free everything for this. So needless to say, he was a douchebag to me, to everyone who came by, to all my friends, etc.
Total poser is what it seems like.
He was literally a poser. I mean, he was into glam metal, and I got that, but I think what he did was he realized that he could work the system,
right,
just barely doing it anyway and still reaping all the benefits.
Right.
And that really irritated me because I'm really big on integrity. And unfortunately, I actually, even though I'm really big on integrity, I kind of compromised mine in this story. So anyway, let me backtrack a little bit. So back then, we all used calling cards when we had to make long distance calls.
Yep, 1-800-COLLECT.
Oh God.
I remember.
So we had calling cards. So I was like, well, he's Captain Douchebag. You know what? I can be douchey too. So he left his calling card out one day, and I took his calling card number and the PIN, and I would just make random phone calls to random places around the world using his calling card.
Awesome.
You know, well, it was just me being a counter dick, I guess you could say. So anyway, so fast forward a little bit further, and I went and saw Nine Inch Nails at Roseland Ballroom in New York.
Awesome.
During their very first Downward Spiral tour.
Oh my God. That and this was, band, so cool.
And this band called Marilyn Manson was opening up, and we didn't know who Marilyn Manson was. Is it a guy? Is it a girl? Is
Were
it a
they still
band?
Marilyn Manson and the Spooky Kids?
No, no, no. They dropped the whole Spooky Kids. When they signed to Interscope Records, they dropped
the... Oh, they were already signed. Yeah. I forgot that that's...
Yeah,
okay,
so they
right.
were the first band on Trent's Nothing
on
Records
Trent's,
label.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but we didn't know anything about it, you know? So, we were just excited. Me and my friends were just excited to see Nine Inch Nails. And so Marilyn Manson comes on, and I was so hypnotized and enthralled. I just couldn't, it was scary and creepy and just really weird. And I just remember walking up to the front of the stage because it was still an opening band. Nobody really knew them.
Right.
The record hadn't even been out yet. Portrait of American Family hadn't even come out yet. And I was just watching him being this creepy dude on stage in striped stockings and his big top hat on, the dope hat, top hat, and
yep.
poking his, you know, like this cane into the crowd. And he just looked terrifying and creepy and crazy. And I was all about it. And Nails was just awesome, too. And so after that, I was like, all right, let me try something. So I called Interscope Records in California, and I said, hi, my name is Ro Coley, and I work for the Kane College, where I was going to school, Gazette, which actually doesn't exist. And I was like, I would like to write an article about your band, Marilyn Manson. Please send me free stuff, I believe is exactly how I put it. So that tells you just how stupid I sounded when I called them up. And they said, actually, you have to call a place called Formula PR in New York City. They handle Marilyn Manson's press. And I said, okay. And they gave me the phone number. And I used this calling card to call that place as well. And I gave them the same spiel. And then they said something that threw me off entirely. They said, would you like to interview him? And I wasn't expecting that. All I really wanted was a free CD. That was really all I wanted. And on top of it, they didn't even have any CDs there. They only sent me an advanced cassette, which was just like...
Oh, my God.
It was just... It with like just a printed cassette, like not even the full thing with lyrics or anything. But the whole like, hey, would you like to interview him, totally threw me off. And I was like, let me listen to it first and I'll get back to you. And I was like, man, if it was that easy to get an interview... I'll just start my own goddamn magazine.
Right.
And so I had this idea of calling it either Shock to the System or Shot to the Head. And I asked my sister which one she liked better, and she said Shock to the System. I said, all right, that sounds good. So Marilyn Manson was my very, very first interview.
Wow.
During the New Music Seminar in New York City, and it's a terrible interview. Absolutely,
like
horrible
you
interview.
Never thought you were gonna do that. How did you? Do you remember how you prepared or any questions that you asked?
Oh God, I still have the first issue at home. I'll send that over to you. It was just a shitty interview. It was terrible. I was nervous. I had no idea what to do. Like, tell me about how you guys met. You
and
know, like
was
it's
he
just
cool. Was it?
He
do
was
you remember?
Stupidly hungover.
Oh.
He was stupidly
well,
hungover.
Then, yeah,
yeah.
That's all that they were about.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
He was, I mean, this was the very beginning
right.
of all of that. So, I mean, he was stupidly hungover in New York City, doing tons of press, doing tons of drugs, blah,
right.
blah, blah, you know, the whole nine.
Oh, I read the book.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. If that's any indication.
Yeah, and
so,
I'm sure that's lighthearted.
Yeah, exactly, right? And that's on the light side of things. But yeah, so it was just a really bad interview. I think I insulted him at one point.
Oh, God.
Accidentally. Because I compared his music to Rob Zombie. I kind of felt that there was a similarity, but I didn't know how to make the connection.
Right.
And I said, like, oh, kind of like Rob Zombie. And he just kind of gave me this look. I remember that. And he showed up to the interview with the one contact in.
Oh, okay.
So it was just really weird to have him kind of give me this, like, kind of cockeyed look with the one contact.
One
and I was just like... And this was a part of... I never foresaw myself in any part of this kind of thing. So I was just kind of like, I don't even know what to expect. Like, is he going to hit me at some point? Is he going to, you know.
Is that cane going to come out of nowhere across my face?
Seriously. Well, not only that, I was so used to watching Pantera home videos and all this stuff. So I'm like ready for him to do something. I didn't even know. And when it was over, I was kind of like, it was weirdly anticlimactic when it was over because he just left with his publicist and that was that. And I just kind of walked away like, okay, great. Now what? But my first issue was literally like 35 pages, like stapled in a corner, one-sided pages, because back then we had no scanners, we had nothing. Everything, any pictures had to be burned onto plates, and it was expensive, and it was just like, it was crazy. So I was just trying to do it as best I could. But as time went on, like, and one of my big things was I wanted every issue to be drawn. I wanted every cover to be drawn by somebody. And my buddy from high school, his dad was a cartoonist. So he did the first cover of Shock to the System. And then my buddy Craig did all a bunch of other covers. And then Karen Crisis did a cover. A buddy of mine, Gabe, did the cover, actually, of the one that you have with the coffee. But yeah, and then another friend of mine, Louis Villanueva, did the issue after this. I guess it was issue 9. So my thing was to constantly, you know, just have a different cool looking cover.
Right.
But then as the issues went on, you know, the the writing got a little bit better. I started feeling a little bit more confident in my writing. And but I mean, I wrote 90% of the interview. I did all the interviews. I did 90% of the album reviews, the concert reviews, like everything. And I was doing it all during college. And then funnily enough, that place Formula PR that was doing their PR stuff, that was the very first place I got an internship.
Oh.
And so I worked there for a while during Downward Spiral, Antichrist Superstar, Natural Born Killer soundtrack, God, what else? Prick, Meat Beat Manifesto. But then they started moving more towards the DJ type stuff, like Plastic Man and Prodigy and stuff like that. And that was really not my thing. I'm a metalhead. but as I started doing more and more interviews, I was interviewing more metal bands, so like Machine Head and stuff like that, and Cold Chamber and things. And Roadrunner Records was literally around the corner from that PR place, from Formula. So I started finding myself there more often. And then I realized, you know what, this Formula place was great, but
it gave you your legs.
It gave me my legs to move to the next level. And then I went to Roadrunner and I became like junior publicist there. Just an intern, but a junior publicist. Excuse me. I was in charge of like calling all the fanzines and calling all the like local papers and getting listings and stuff like that, you know. And that first year was I guess that was 97, so that was the first year of the Traveling Ozfest.
Oh, gotcha.
And we had the whole Roadrunner Rules the Ozfest, because we had I think either 5 or 6 bands on that year.
I was there.
Yeah,
I remember.
We had Typo, VOD, Cold Chamber, Machine Head, crap, I know I'm missing somebody in there. Shoot. But yeah, we had like 5 or 6 bands. It was crazy. So I was just calling up all these places and just getting interviews and setting up interview schedules. And that was really what happened. And all throughout college, I did Shock to the System and somehow managed to go to concerts constantly and get involved in all sorts of crazy adventures and still managed to like be like top of my class and go to shows and put out a zine, and like it was just kind of crazy.
You're like, I was just living the life. I
think at my peak I was working 5 jobs. I had 15 credits. I was doing my zine, still found time to do drugs and go to shows. Like, I still trying to figure out how to do that. I wish I could do that again in a weird way, you know, just so I could figure out how I'd manage my time so well. But I think, you know, not having the internet be such a distraction.
Yeah.
You know, everything was just, you know, everything was just right there. It's like you had nothing to do when you're sitting on a train.
Right.
Other than listening to music and writing.
Yep.
You know, so that's what I did.
Absolutely.
But then when I moved out to LA in 98.
Time out before get there. I have a question about your zine, because you stopped it when you came out to LA, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we leave the zine, I need to know, who was your favorite interview while you did the zine?
Oh my God, that's a really good question. I got a couple. One was Odorous from Guar. We did 2 interviews with Odorous and we spliced them together. So it was, we did one where he was unmasked and one that he was masked. So it was this kind of Jekyll and Hyde of Odorous kind of thing. And it is by far one of the most hysterical interviews ever. The stuff that he said, he wanted to do his whole spoken word tour called a spoken turd. He wanted to, he was talking about fucking sperm whales with frozen midgets. Oh, I mean, God. It was out of control. It was absolutely hysterical. That one, my Machine Head interview was really good, but I think my favorite one was the one that I did with Snot.
Okay.
I got to interview Lynn Strait, and I love those guys to this day. I still love them.
That Gets Them is still on my iPod. It will never leave. And Mikey and Carl, like, they're great. And I just have to say to Snot, I got to see them on the second stage at Ozfest.
98.
Yep, in 98. It was 3 months, I think it was, before he passed year. Yeah. And I remember I was crowd surfing to them. And I got thrown over, you know, like the side,
barricade.
The barricade, like, and the stage is right in front. Well, when it happened, I didn't realize how close to the stage I was. And so I got to the back. I was like, oh, crap. Like, I was right there. Like, what am I? So I went back up, you know, and I'm like, throw me over the edge. And so I got thrown back over, and I just, like, screamed, like, to just touch them, like, just shake my hand. And I just see these big security guards, like, running down to pull me out. And Lynn, in the middle of the song, stopped singing. Was like, yo, don't mess with her. And he came over and he shook my hand. Mikey came over and shook my hand. I was like, oh, my God. That was awesome.
That was
my Snot story.
They were always, every time they came to New Jersey and New York, they treated me like I was part of the family. I was just a crap zine kid, you know. As far as I was concerned, I was just a little dude, not really much of anything. And they always treated me like, seriously, like I was family. And to this day, when I see Mikey, when I see Jamie, when I see Sonny, I mean, I really do consider them my family. And so a funny story enough about that Lynn Strait interview was on the Straight Up CD, the last song, which is called Sad Air, where Lynn is talking, is from my interview. That's me interviewing him.
Really?
And what happened was I submitted the interview, but the people putting the record together didn't know who the interview came from, so they didn't know who to credit. And so when I was on Ozfest, when I was on tour with Soulfly in 2000, and I got an advance of the cassette, and I'm listening to it on the tour bus, and I'm like, man, this sounds so familiar. And I had a friend of mine from back then mail me a copy of my zine, and I was like, holy shit, it's my interview with Lynn. And so it's like it's just an unfortunate thing that I never got the credit for it.
Right.
I really wish I could have, because I loved being a part of all of that, you know.
Gave me chills when you said that, by the way, because I don't think many people even know the Straight Up, you know, CD, like, to be honest with you, and it's really cool, and I know exactly what you're talking about, so that's crazy.
Yeah, it's in the issue that have right there.
Yeah. No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's crazy because I know that CD and I've heard that. So,
and
like,
I'll tell you something else. When I interviewed them, it was them, Dub War, and Fishbone playing at Club Binet in New Jersey, and I just remember sitting there interviewing Lynn, and he was telling me and my friend when we were interviewing so much weird, like, not weird, but just so much personal deep stuff that I felt almost pseudo uncomfortable, but I felt at the same time he felt comfortable enough with me to tell me this stuff. And I've always been like, it's always been one of those things that, like, you know, when I think about him, I'm just like, man, like it's always something that, you know, even thinking about when he passed. And I mean, I went to his funeral and everything, and it was just one of those things where it made me feel like, wow, like I was actually a part of something.
Yeah.
And you know, because seriously, growing up in New Jersey, being a metalhead, being an Indian guy metalhead in New Jersey, it was about, like, seriously, if I was gay, that would have probably been the only other thing I could have been to put me in a further niche,
right?
You know, and I'm not gay, but still, but that's the thing. It was such a, you know, to be a part of that, and just, you know, there was always those Metal Maniacs, and there was Metal Edge, and there was these bigger, Rip Magazine was still big, and Hit Parader. So there was all these bigger metal journalists, bigger metal photographers, and I was always, you know, like the little kid in the photo pit, just like with my little disc camera, click, 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 you know. And next to these dudes with huge, you know, crazy football lenses and stuff, you know. And, you know, but it was the fact that bands like Snot or like Nothing Face, that they treated me so well that it was, you know, that's
and willing to give someone who didn't have all these notorieties and credits underneath them to give them that chance.
Just give me a chance. Just give me a chance to hang out with them and party with them and really, and a lot of those connections are still here today. I mean, when I see Mikey or Sonny or any of those guys, it really does. It's like no time has passed.
Right.
And it's a really cool thing. But then when I moved out here in 98, you know, I was trying to put together that 10th issue, and I don't know if it was just because I moved out of my parents' house and new responsibilities and new everything, a new place to live. You know, yeah. I couldn't quite pull it all together. You know, I have a bunch of interviews and stuff from that time, but they just never really saw the light of day. And it got to the point where it was really expensive, and then trying to find advertisers to help offset the costs while I was trying to find a job, a full-time gig. And then when you got a gig, and then you're trying to figure out, well, how am I supposed to call advertisers and do interviews when all the stuff is going on? It really became it became so hard to do, and then it just kind of fizzled out and died, and that was kind of it. It's unfortunate. I love doing it.
It is unfortunate. I thought you were a great interviewer, a great journalist. I love reading this episode this what article number?
Issue.
There we go. This issue of your zine. So I do want to read that first one, though, with Marilyn Manson.
Oh, my God.
I'm intrigued now.
Terrible.
But let me take a quick break so I can play another song from my band, Bloody Diamonds. And we are going to play Disease. And this is off of They've Got Secrets, their first full-length album. And they are due out for another one next year. So I'm really looking forward to this. But this one is called Disease. Enjoy. We'll be right back. Me dance till I started to care now. There's no way for catastrophe. Make me believe your life is the one that I want now. But your thoughts right in my head, they're full of dirt. Tell them I'm gonna say now. Feel any better, he's got gold at his feet now. Back. That was Disease from Bloody Diamonds, and I have a Ro Coley in studio with me. Still, he hasn't run away, and he's still willing to talk, so I love that.
Wow, this is fun. I love this.
But before we get into more with you, I just have to give out a little special here to everybody so you know where to go. You need to know the events that you need to go to. So I'm going to give you some for the next couple of weeks so you have places to go. So on the 12th, you can go to Hotel Cafe to check out the Palace Ballroom and Ships Have Sailed. On the 16th at the Silver Lake Lounge are my band of the episode, Bloody Diamond, so make sure you catch them there. On the 17th at the Whiskey, it's the Los Angeles Music Awards, and they're selling 25 years in music with live performances from Jack Russell's Great White. And every Friday at the Viper Room this month, Paradise Kitty has a residency, so make sure you get out there and check it out, because they said every show they're going to do something special. And I just checked them out last Friday. They are totally worth it. So get your butts over there on Fridays. At the Viper Room on the 20th, Desecrate, Brain Dead, and N-Rot play.
N-Rot.
Those are one of your boys.
Oh, those are my boys.
Yep. I know.
Love my N-Rot boys.
On the 22nd at the Whiskey, it's the Battle for Not Fest. Mm. My boys in Caustic will be there, Still Not Dead, and Black Void, and more. So make sure you get down there and help out the band that you want to see get to Not Fest. And then every Wednesday at Skinny's, don't forget, down in North Hollywood at Skinny's Lounge, Uncle Scum Love presents Rock Karaoke, where you can go and check out a few bands and then afterwards maybe sing, play some guitar or drum for yourself. I seen you up on stage.
Love my metal karaoke.
Yeah.
Love my metal karaoke.
It's a blast. We've both been up on stage singing a few times.
Hell yeah.
It's a good time. And Scum Love, he does an amazing job making sure that everybody has an amazing time.
And, you know, I have to say something about Scum, actually, and about Skinny's. One of the things that I absolutely love about the way they work things is, instead of just paying the band, he walks around with a bucket and says, tip the band.
Yeah.
And I think that is the best thing, because if you're a band and you get a bunch of tips, it means that you did really, really well.
Right.
And if you didn't get a lot of tips, that means you got to friggin' work your ass off next time and figure your shit out and do better.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the best way to do it, because if you just pay a band a guarantee, like, oh, okay, here's $200. It's like, dude, they can play a crap show and still get $200. And I think that sucks.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, we've talked about integrity a little earlier on the show. And that is one thing that I admire about you. And one thing that I always try to uphold with myself is my integrity. I never want to send someone out to go see a show and just because they might be my friends or a band that I know of. I want to send people out to a show to go see that band that I saw that one time that made me go, oh my God, this is a great live show.
Right.
You know, I mean, for instance, I have to say it, but my band this week, this episode, Bloody Diamonds, they put on an awesome show. Sarah, the vocalist and keyboardist, she knows how to captivate her audience. I mean, if not for her singing alone, she's playing keys up there, she's singing, but she's giving a performance.
See, that's the best. It's like, I can't wait to see them, just based on everything you've been saying.
But it is. And that's any band. Like, you know, I have a band coming up, Merzik, and it's the same thing. When you can entrance your audience and get people to, like, really, like, it might not even be that you enjoy that music per se, but they encapsulated you because they have an actual show for you to see, you know, and they're giving it their all. They're not just writing it in and being like, okay, and I'm just gonna stand here. I don't even enjoy my own music. I don't understand bands like that.
That's why I love sending people to see N-Rot.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, Quentin puts on, he's a great front man.
You know,
Quentin is a great front man.
I'll tell you, the way I feel about N-Rot is like this, and I really hope people go and check them out, because they make me feel the way I felt when I used to go and see Pantera.
Yeah.
And it's not that they sound like Pantera, and they have Pantera influences and qualities to it, absolutely.
Yep.
But they have that same feeling of fun that Pantera had.
Like, I like to call it gritty fun.
It is.
Right?
It is. It's totally gritty fun, because the music is still serious, the lyrics are still serious, but they're having such a blast on stage that it's so infectious when you're in the crowd. And the fact that they let me come up on stage and let me sing Primal Concrete Sledge with them every time they play, it's like, seriously, I feel like I die in a good way every time I get to get on stage and do that.
And Justin, their drummer,
phenomenal.
I love watching him. Really enjoy watching him.
That dude can play like 900 instruments too. He can play trumpet, he can play piano, he can play guitar, he can play drums. He's amazing.
Multi-talented.
Super multi-talented.
So that's on the 20th at the Viper Room. So make sure everybody goes out to see them. And again, they're playing with Desecrate and Brain Dead.
That's going
to
be an amazing show.
Although I don't know what's going to happen with Brain Dead. One of their members just left. So I'm interested to see where that's going to go.
I'm always amazed when a member leaves and somehow a band finds somebody to fill that place so fast. I'm always constantly baffled by that.
But... I mean, well, I take a good example from All Hail the Yeti. I mean, now, like I said to them on the interview that I did, like, I feel like they found their fourth brother. Like, I feel like they are exactly they're a solid where they're supposed team now. To be now. Yeah, exactly.
Another one of my favorites.
Exactly.
Probably.
So see, guys, we're not lying to you. We know.
No,
we know
All Hail the Yeti. All Hail the Yeti is those are my boys also, man. Them and Enrod, you know.
And they've played a couple of shows together, which is awesome. I think that's a great pairing.
We travel to see them play. Like me and my girl, we travel down to San Diego
to
see them.
Shout out to Bic.
Shout out to Bic.
What, lady? We love you.
That's right. Bic Tatawats.
For real, though. Actually, funny story, because Bic won tickets.
To see Meshuggah.
To see Meshuggah through one of my promotions that
I
did.
That's
one of
actually
my
how
raffles.
We all kind of met.
Yeah, and it's been awesome. I'm so happy that she won.
I am, too.
Seriously. Okay, so I need to pick back up here because that's what I do. We get off track, but then we get back on.
You're like the queen of picking back up, dude. Seriously, amazing.
Thank you. Okay, so you are now out in California. Kind of, I guess in a way, I'd like to use the term, you're a little lost when you came out because you didn't know. Not right now. You're totally good.
Like,
you're found. You're in a good place.
I thought I was doing all right.
And you decided, like, so let's fast forward a little bit because you came out in, what did you say?
I came out in 98.
98,
I came out in 98. I worked at a bunch of different places for a bunch of huge bands. I used to work at The Firm for Korn and Limp Bizkit and Ice Cube when Family Values first started. Korn put out Follow the Leader.
Yep.
So that was
I remember that tour. It was Korn, Hon, Rammstein, Incubus,
Limp Bizkit.
Ice Cube, and that was 1998.
An orgy.
Creelo, that's right.
God, everything was all about Adidas and friggin' sweatsuits, Puma, everything, and what was it? Kappa
that
wear.
That whole show, though.
That was insanity.
Oh my God, that show. And to see Ice Cube playing with that, it was like one of those things that when you're a kid, you know, and you're going, I think I was like, 15 when or 16 when that show happened. Lord. And I was like, we're gonna see Ice Cube, I guess, but we had so much fun. And then Rammstein, I mean, because they were all so together but so far apart,
like, right? It was a weird little Lollapalooza in and of itself,
yeah,
it really was.
It was awesome,
it was, so that was going on at the time, and Limp Bizkit was at their height, so it was insanity. Like, I have horror stories like crazy from that, but that's.
I'm taking you back in another night, and we're going to talk about all of that.
Oh my God,
I want these horror stories.
I have some serious fucking crazy horror stories from that time. I worked at Andy Gould Management for Rob Zombie, Monster Magnet, Typo Negative, Static X, one of my favorite bands. You know, it's like I was working there. I was working at a company called Band Bitch that was doing street marketing. And unfortunately, L.A. kind of chewed me up and spit me out. And I ended up moving back to the East Coast at the end of 99, kind of with my tail between my legs and really bummed out because I thought that I really had a future out here and it didn't really work out. And then right when I got back to New Jersey, it was really actually here's a funny story. I was originally my plan was to go back to New Jersey, work for Nuclear Blast. Out there and some, I don't know, they had some regional office out there, make practically no money, and save and live with my folks and then move back to LA. And out of nowhere, Roadrunner offered me one of three jobs. They literally told me, pick one. And I became the tour coordinator at Roadrunner Records. And so I was in charge of all the guest lists and all the tour promotions and everything like that. And then as the street marketing thing started to really build up and build and build and build, I saw that we were paying all this money to have all this, hiring all these street marketing companies, and they weren't really giving us anything, but they were pretending they were. They were giving us these really huge reports, but the reports didn't say anything. They were just, it was just fluff.
Yeah.
It was really just fluff.
Just telling you what you wanted to hear.
Yeah. And it was, and everybody was so enamored by it because they had so much, you know, so much success with like System of a Down and all these bands, like I said. And so I basically wrote a proposal saying, hey, I want to be your street marketing guy. And so they made me the street marketing guy and literally immediately threw me out on Ozfest. I'd never been on a moving tour bus before. I had never done anything like that. And I was out with Soulfly, and I basically was Flavor Flav. I was the Flavor Flav for Soulfly. I was the hype man. I came out and I got the crowd super hyped up. Primitive hadn't come out yet.
I'm sure I've seen you then.
Oh, you, bro, but I was throwing cassette samplers out into the crowd, and everybody was going crazy. And then Soulfly would come out, and the whole place would go nuts. And that was my first touring experience, and it was that's yet more horror stories for another time. Some really funny stories, but some horror stories there too. But that was just insane. And then in 2001, Roadrunner, because I'd constantly been, you know, making a play like, hey, you kind of need somebody in LA, you kind of need somebody out here. And smart. So they eventually moved me out here. You know, smart, yes, but at the same time, I because of the nature of who I am, I'm constantly like trying to do better. I'm always trying to figure out how to do better, how to make things better. I think I became a thorn in the executive side.
Well, so, I also think that you're kind of like me, where it's work smarter, not harder.
Right.
To get better results.
Right. And yeah. I think they kind of looked at me like I became more of a vocal part of things when they didn't want me to be a vocal part of things.
Gotcha.
You know, street marketing was always what I call the kids' table. You know, radio, retail, press, those were all the big players. Street marketing was this new thing, and I was like the redheaded stepchild, and I was always, but at the same time, I was always like, no, I want to be heard as well.
Right.
And I think when they transferred me to LA, it was more of a good, let's just get him out of our hair. And so they moved me out to LA, so I was really happy, but it became an out of sight, out of mind thing. So eventually, once Nickelback became a much bigger force to be reckoned with and started really driving sales and driving a lot of things that was Roadrunner, I started to lose interest. You know, they were taking money away from my bands and giving it to Nickelback. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have street teamers and they're all really passionate Slipknot, DSI, Fear Factory kids, you know, you can't really be like, oh, sorry, we don't have stuff to hand out because Nickelback has all our money. You know, no kid wants to hear that. And I couldn't.
No self-respecting kid anyway.
No self-respect. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. It's funny because, you know, even with Nickelback, Theory of a Dead Man, a lot of those bands, you know, I was always honest with my kids. You know, and I told them, like, look, this might not be your thing. And if it's not your thing, that's fine. You know, and that was always the thing with working at a record label, was that our job isn't to like the bands.
Right.
You know, our job isn't to like the bands. Our job is to work it and market it. You know, one of my marketing teachers in college said, you know, marketing and PR is basically convincing people that chicken shit is chicken salad.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that was really necessary. So I would tell them, look, I get that you love Slipknot and you love promoting it, but we need you to promote Nickelback in a similar way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like it, but we have to promote it. That's the way we have to do it. And a lot of kids became really good friends with Nickelback, or they became fans, you know. And sometimes, you know, if you don't really feel like listening to death metal, or you go to Ozfest and you're listening to 19 hours of metal, yeah, maybe on the drive home you want to listen to something a little bit more mellow, you know. And I always gave people that opportunity or that option,
right?
You know, but I never went in like, you have to like this. It's right. Gotta be like this. You know, I couldn't do that, and that's what they always wanted me to do.
Right.
And they were trying to just have me kind of have my kids be slave labor, and I was like, sorry, I don't. That's not what I do. And so, after I left Roadrunner, I went to Streetwise, which was another street marketing company. Same thing. I was just like, I just kind of saw the ugly underbelly of it all.
Yeah.
You know, and then I went to Century Media and, you know, Warner Brothers, and I worked my way around, and then I just kind of got burnt out. I got burnt out on the music industry, and I was doing tourism marketing for a little bit. I was just kind of like, let's see if this works. Let's see how we can make this happen and how different it is. And tourism marketing is no different than working at a record company. It's
right.
Same bunch of retards and idiots and people who have no clue of what's going on around them, you know. And you know, ultimately, once, you know, I bounced around from job to job, and I just got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm sick of sending out resumes. I'm sick of doing all of this stuff. And that's and that kind of leads right into where War Machine came.
Yeah.
I just got to the point where I was like, you know what, this is just getting stupid.
And what's awesome, too, is you're doing something that's yours. You don't have anybody to answer to. You have yourself to answer to, which sometimes proves to be even better because you're doing it. You're doing it with the highest quality that you can do.
That's kind of it. It's like my successes and my failures are my own.
Right.
You know, and the failures suck, but
You learn. But you learn
from them. I mean, I'm right now. I'm in the middle of a couple of lawsuits just because, you know, companies have tried to take advantage of me, and there's nothing worse than you know, somebody hiring you to do a job, and you know, like hypothetically, I'm just gonna kind of relate it sort of differently, but like, you know, if you go and you're building a house and you go to Home Depot to buy your tools, and Home Depot sells you a bunch of crap tools, you know, it's like, well, then yeah, you're the house that you build isn't going to look that great for the person you're building it for,
right?
And that's kind of what I've had to deal with is that kind of thing where, unfortunately, you know, a client gets let down, but in the end, I'm the one who's got to fight the fight, and maintain my integrity. You know, you can't run away, you can't, you know, you can't just duck into a corner, you know, hide under the covers, like none of that. None
I mean,
of that
in
stuff
some
works.
Random weird way, doesn't that kind of say that you've made it? You know, you've made that company now because you're in these battles.
You know, in a weird,
I know it's weird to say, but it's when they say bad press. No bad press. No
such thing
that?
As no such thing as
no
bad
such
press.
Thing as bad press. Thank you.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's on the one hand, it's the nature of doing business. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to always hope that the people that you're working with are going to do the right job.
Right.
But sometimes people aren't out there to do the right job. And like I said, that's the thing about War Machine. We don't just, you know, dissolve the company and then pop up as another company.
Yeah.
And when you're doing stuff like promotional items and merchandising, a lot of stuff is outsourced to China and whatnot. So sometimes what'll end up happening is, hey, what do you do when a Chinese factory lets you down?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Or like I did a bunch of stuff early in the War Machine days with Epitaph Records, and there was a dock strike, you know, and they had ordered a bunch of stuff from us. I mean, like thousands and thousands of items for Warped Tour. And we unfortunately missed the first Warped Tour in L.A. I mean, obviously like one of the biggest shows.
Right.
But what do you do when there's a dock strike? Yeah. Like there's nobody, you know, I mean, literally our stuff is completed and done, but we can't access it,
right?
You know, so what do you do in a situation like that? But you know, as a business owner, you can't just go to Epitaph Record and be like, oh, it's their fault,
right?
No, they're looking at you, they hired you to do it, you're the guy,
you
got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And you know, and same thing, it's like I'm the actually just on that note, when we finally got that stuff for Epitaph, I literally had to drive. Like we made like 50,000 of like five different items, and I had to drive 2,500 of them because it was all in bags. So
okay.
like these drawstring bags and everything, and we had to stuff them with all these different Epitaph stuff, like sunscreen and all these kinds of things. And I literally drove from LA at midnight all the way to San Francisco, dropped off the stuff in San Francisco, drove back to LA that same, like literally dropped it off. Here you go. Back in the car, back to LA, picked up another 2,500. And the following day, I drove to Ventura to drop it off there. And then we were able to actually get all the drop shipments to work out properly.
Wow.
But that's what you have to do. You know, you have to make those sacrifices in that regard. You know, you can't just be like, oh, sorry, not working on the weekends, Saturday. You know,
I'm going to sleep in today.
You know, it's like when that stuff happens, you just have to deal with it as you need, you know, as best you can, you know. And I'm the type of person where I'm like, hey, if it means I don't get sleep, then I don't get sleep. You know, my client's got an event this weekend. I can't be like, sorry, I guess your stuff is coming in on Monday. Like that doesn't work.
Yeah. You business know? Never stops.
Business never stops.
It never sleeps. So I just want to say, because we have to wrap this up,
I can imagine.
We're running out of time.
I'm rambling.
I love it though, but I have so much more to ask you. So I'm already going to ask you right now on my show. Will you come back another day?
Oh hell yeah!
Okay, good.
Are you kidding me?
Because we didn't even touch on the surface of labels and how things have changed.
God, that's
and
right.
I know you've been there, and I want to dig in deep with you one day. So if I
anytime.
Could already ask you to have you back,
anytime.
I would love that. Awesome. All right. So if you guys need any marketing gear or anything like that, even if you want an action figure made of yourself, you know who to call. You know who to get a hold of. It's Ro Coley. And you can do that at warmachinemarketing.com. Go on to Facebook. It's facebook.com/warmachinemarketing. Marketing, but that's MKTG. Warm Machine, MKTG. And are you guys on Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, we're on Instagram too. Awesome. Warm Machine Marketing, the whole nine. Twitter and all that sort of nonsense.
Perfect.
I don't even know what else I'm on. I'm probably on other things too
I'm not even aware of. Everything, yeah. Right? But just look up War Machine Marketing and you guys will find everything that you might need from, I mean, God, you guys wrap cars, yeah, right?
We
you
deal with over a million buses, items.
I mean, business cards, posters.
If you can put a logo on it, I can make it.
So see that, guys? All your needs met right here with this one
guy.
That's
what we do.
Awesome. I so appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much, Jess. This was awesome fun.
I had a blast. I can't wait. And guys, don't forget, on the 16th at the Silver Lake Lounge is my band of the episode, Bloody Diamond. So go check them out. And then one more quick shout out to our boys at NROT playing on the 20th at
Hell
the Viper
yeah.
Room.
Yeah, go and see them.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been In Your Ear. I'm Jess Fama. Remember, guys, you need to create your own universe because no one else is going to do it for you. Thanks a lot, Ro. Have a great, great night.
You too. Awesome. Thank you.